AGM is about to begin, and I would like to invite all shareholders to be seated. Thank you for your cooperation. I will now hand over the meeting to Ambika Goel, our Head of Investor Relations.
Thank you, Julie. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. Before we start, we request that everyone put their cell phones into silent mode, please. I would like to introduce today our Board of Directors and management. Seated in the center is Dr. Sik Nee Huat, our Chairman. He's joined on his right by Mr. Ming Mei, our CEO, Steve Shuti, our COO, Paul Wee, our Group Financial Controller, Board Directors Mr. Luciano Lewandowski and Dr. Deepak Jain, and Mr. Yoichiro Furuse. To the left of our Chairman today, we have our Corporate Secretary, Julie Ko, our Board Directors Mr. Stephen Lim, Mr. Tam Kwee Sing, Mr. Fang Fang Lei, and Mr. Lim Swee Guan. We would like to express our thanks to the overseas-based directors for traveling to attend this meeting. Mr. Paul Cheng is not able to join us today and sends his apologies. The Chairman has elected under the company's constitution to put the resolutions for this meeting by way of poll. Polling at today's AGM will be conducted using wireless handheld devices. Drew Corp and Boardroom have been appointed as scrutineer and polling agent, respectively. With that, I would now like to hand it over to Mr. Raymond Lim from Drew Corp to walk you through the electronic shareholding process.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I will now explain how voting will be carried out this morning. At registration, you should have been issued an electronic keypad and a smart card. The keypad and the smart card are required for voting when called upon by the Chairman today. The smart card should have been inserted into the keypad for you at registration, but please check that it has been inserted correctly. Make sure the arrows are at the bottom of the smart card are facing you. Insert the smart card up to the red line where the smart card is inserted correctly into the keypad. Your name and the number of voting shares should be displayed on the screen. When the Chairman calls for a vote on the resolution, the display on the keypad will change to show you the voting options. You may do one of the following options: press one if you wish to vote for the resolution, and press two if you wish to vote against the resolution. The display on the keypad will then show the voting decision taken by you, and you may change your vote at any time while the poll remains open by selecting your new choice. If you wish to cancel your vote, please press the C button. If your smart card is not inserted correctly during a vote, a warning message will appear on the display. Please raise your hands in that case, and one of the ushers will come to assist you. Voting will be open for 15 seconds on each resolution, and this will be indicated with a countdown timer on the top right-hand corner of the screen in front of you. To give you an opportunity to practice using the electronic handheld device, we will now do a test resolution. The test resolution, let's say today is a warm day. Please cast your votes now. Press one if you wish to vote for, two if you wish to vote against the resolution. The voting is now open. As you can see, there's a countdown timer on the top right-hand corner. You have about 4 more seconds. Okay, the poll is now closed, and the results of this test resolution will be shown on the screen ahead of you. I now hand the meeting back to the Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now have Mr. Ming Mei, our CEO, go through the company's strategy and recent performance.
Good morning, dear shareholders, and I would like to take some time to share with you, give an update about business. and start with our business strategy. Our business model is to become the best operator of logistic facilities around the world. And with our operation capabilities, we go and select the market that give us risk-adjusted returns, such as China, Japan, and Brazil, to focus on development and generate development profit. As we grow our business, we also demonstrate a track record. Capital partners come to us and ask us to manage the capital. So we start developing our fund management business 5 years ago, and today we have over $35 billion of AUM, and that generates fees on an annual basis. So just to give you a highlight for the financial year 2016, earnings were up 48% year on year. We continue to have a strong balance sheet with diversified source of funding, and we're proposing 6 cents of dividend. That's an increase of 9% from last year. Again, our operational momentum continues to be very strong. We currently have a total of 38 million square meters across 4 countries. 90% of the demand comes from domestic consumptions. Our customer retention rate is at 66%, and our same property NOI is up 6.9%. We generate $255 million of profit from development, and that's represented about 20% development margin. And we expect about $200 million this year. Again, as I mentioned, the fund management is a very scalable business. Since we started the business 5-6 years ago, we have now created $35 billion AUM. That's generated about $150 million in fees. That's up 30% from last year. Again, of the 4 countries we are currently operating in, we are number one in China, Japan, Brazil, and within a little over a year, we become the number two player in the U.S. As you can see, in China, Japan, and Brazil, we're the dominant leader with a wide margin. Especially in China, we're bigger than the next 10 competitors add together. We expect that to continue in the foreseeable future. Again, the business we have built over the years have created a network effect. If you look at all the new leases, new development we create, 70% of the demand come from existing customers. So we have a pretty good visibility of where the new customer demand is coming from, where is a good market to develop, because we're constantly talking to our existing customers. They give us an idea where they want to invest over the next 6 to 12 months, the next 1 or 2 years, and then we have a low risk because we understand where the demand will be coming from. Again, 40% of customers lease from us in multiple locations. Again, that's the power of the network effect. And 66% of customers renew their leases with us when it expires. Here's just an example. One of the fastest growing e-commerce company in China, JD.com, over the years, they have grew on an annual basis 109%. Again, this is the power of the network effect. Okay. As I mentioned, for the year 2016 financial year, we generated $255 million profit, the one profit. This year, we expect to be about $200 million. And consistently every year, we have maintained around 25% development margin. We expect that to continue over the next near term, given what we see in the market. Why is it important to have a fund management business? Because we have limited equity, we have limited capital, but there's more opportunity out there that we have capital for. So instead of borrowing more money from the bank, which is increased risk for the company, we leverage other people's equity to invest alongside us, and we charge them a fee. So we charge them for construction, for managing their money, We charge them for managing the asset. We charge them every time we help lease a facility. And then their investment, if they reach a certain return, they share an upside with us. So again, typically when we leverage a fund management model, we increase our return by 300 to 500 basis points. Besides focusing on becoming a market leader and also making money for you guys, we also focus on the environment that we operate in and how we give back to the communities that we invest in. So some of the programs that we do, we create very energy efficient buildings. We also put roof on solar roof in our buildings in Japan to generate electricity. 22 of our buildings are LEED certified. For every 1 square meter we built in China, we put 1 RMB towards school programs to go to remote areas and less fortunate areas and generate and create schools. So now we have about 13 schools built. 6,000 students are in these schools. We also have a spring program where we create music programs and English programs for these children beyond that. We also go to other schools that we don't build. So currently we have about 7,000 students enrolled in the program already. And also I'm very pleased to share with you that recently we've been awarded the Bronze Award for the best corporate governance from the Singapore Corporate Awards. And it's also, we've been ranked one of the top 5 private equity and real estate for the last 2 years in a row for one of the fastest growing fundraising and fund management in private equity real estate world. We've also been named best industrial warehouse developer in China, Japan, Brazil, Latin America, and Asia, and Euromoney in 2015 survey. And this is the 9th consecutive year that GLP had won this award. On the market overview, China, we are seeing some slowdown in some of the markets we operate in. Some of the second-tier cities, we are seeing oversupply. But overall, majority of market we operate in continue to be very strong. On a mid- to long-term basis, we continue to be very bullish on the Chinese market. We are seeing organized retail, continue to grow from the current 15%. E-commerce continue to drive demand for large facilities. So we continue to see a very strong, healthy leasing in most of the market we operate in China. In Japan, we continue to see very strong demand, and vacancy in Japan major markets are very low. So we continue to grow. The challenging in Japan is going to be acquiring good sites, and that's something that we continue to leverage our team in Japan to continue to look for good sites in both the Tokyo and Osaka area. U.S. is one of the it is the largest logistic warehouse market in the world, and it's one of the most mature market, but it continues to be very strong in rental growth. Over the last few quarters, we've seen leases renew at 19 to 20% on renewal, and that's because the lack of supply and e-commerce continue to drive demand in the top 30 markets we'll be focusing on. So over the last 18 months, we've become the second largest player in the U.S., we continue to look for new opportunities to grow in the U.S. market. Brazil, with the political uncertainty and also slowdown economy, it is a challenging market for us. Currently, our lease ratio is about 89%. We continue to be around that area for the next couple quarters, but we also start seeing the worst is behind us, and we continue to look at selected development opportunities to meet our customer demands. Looking forward, GLP is well positioned for future growth. Strong liquidity and access to capital. We have a solid capital partner from the private equity world, and we continue to see attractive investment opportunities. We've continued to focus on being the best operator in logistic warehousing, and we'll look at markets that give us the risk-adjusted returns like China, Japan, and Brazil for development. And we will leverage our fund management platform to continue to grow in all our markets. And again, thank you for your trust.
Kiu Ming. The company secretary has advised me that a quorum is present. The notice convening the AGM has been circulated to the members, and with your concurrence, I would like to dispense with the reading of the notice. The first resolution is to adopt the directors' statement, audited financial statements, and the auditor's report thereon. The directors' statement and the audited financial statements for the year ended 31st March 2016, and the auditor's report and a CD-ROM have been in your hands for the statutory period. I would like to propose that the directors' statement and audited financial statements for the year ended 31st March 2016, and the auditor's report thereon be and are hereby received and adopted. May I call upon a shareholder to second the motion? Please press one on the keyboard to have your name recorded. Thank you. The motion has been proposed and seconded. We're happy to answer any questions on the directors' statement and audited financial statements. As usual, before you ask the question, please give us your name, and if you are a proxy or representative, please state the name of the person or company you represent.
Hi, I'm Lee Chin Wai, a shareholder. I like the company's business very much. However, I'm a bit concerned that the company has been overpaying for its acquisition. Take, for example, on July 15 this year, the company bought over this company called China XG Technology. It paid $22 million, but the book value is only 5,600 renminbi RMB. The price-to-book ratio is 25,000 times. Can the management please explain this acquisition and whether what are the governance in place to ensure that the company doesn't overpay for acquisitions? Thank you.
Why don't you come here?
This is an acquisition of some of a development property which we're building in China. Now, the accounting principle that we use is Chinese GAAP for this. So actually, this property has been, it's not fair market value. So the property value has been depreciated, and therefore that reflects the book value. So it's not an apples-to-apples measure. When GLP reports things in their financial, we use fair market valuations, but this is Chinese GAAP. So it's not relevant to necessarily look at the book value, which is based, if you look in the statutory filing, it says it's based on Chinese accounting principles. Is that sufficient color of what you're
saying? Maybe I just want to add that what she's saying is that in China, unlike Singapore, when you buy a residential, price appreciates, you mark it to market. But in China, land depreciate over 40 years or 50 years, all depends on the type of land that you buy, and then also the building depreciate. So if you hold a building for 20 years, by accounting definition, the value is going to be half what is recorded before. And especially if we're buying asset from a state-owned company, they actually lot the land that was given to them at no cost. So it's recorded as a zero cost basis. But when we buy something, we buy what the market is worth. So we basically get appraised from a third party what the value of that asset is. And we also do our own underwriting based on the cash we can generate from it. So to give you an idea, in China, any asset we buy, we're looking at right now about a 6-7% cap rate on acquisition based on the different city we're in. If we are developing, buying a piece of land, developing, we're looking at about a 8-9% cap rate. Cap rate is basically how much cash I can get from the rent divided by my total value, and that's the cap rate. So just to let you know that what you recorded is an actual factual accounting, but again, the seller is using a Chinese accounting by law. That's what recorded at a low base.
Okay. What is the governance in place to ensure that the company doesn't overpay for acquisitions?
So we have a very very strict underwriting model, underwriting principle. So it goes different. So go from a regional. Let's say that a city general manager wants to pursue a project. They do the underwriting, and the underwriting is done by a separate team in Shanghai that's not conflicted. And then the underwriting assumptions is based on rent that they assume, but also we compare it to nearby projects that's already in place to make sure the rent quoted or assumed is not out of market. And then from that, we do underwriting, and we have a minimum return requirement set by the board across different countries and different regions and based on locations. And then the return must be above that to get to the China Investment Committee level. And then once the China Investment Committee level approve it and due diligence is performed, it present to the Management Global Investment Board, which I chair. And then if the investment amount is exceeding a certain amount, it had to go to the entire board's investment committee for approval. And then also, we constantly, every quarter, we evaluate our asset values compared to what the external appraisers we hire on. In each country is a different appraiser, but we also compare that, what we have internal versus what's external. And then on top of that, we also have KPMG every quarter review what the asset value has been properly reflected.
Okay. So what I summarize is that for each transaction, there are actually different groups of independent people looking at the transaction.
Correct.
Okay. In future announcement on acquisition, are you able to provide more details? Because just by reporting the price and the NTA, it is not very comforting.
Yes, so we provide our investor relationship department, IR department, to stand by any kind of question that you want to ask. Every announcement we have, there's a very strict SGX requirement. So sometimes, just like accounting, doesn't make sense, but it's correct. So a lot of SGX rules require to be a certain template, certain style. So if anything that outside of it, we cannot do. So, but you can always make an inquiry directly into our IR team.
Okay, thank you. I have a next question. Okay, so what are the technology risks that the company look into? For example, recently the U.S. have trialed the use of drones for delivery. How does it affect the business of the company?
That's a very good question. So if you look at how e-commerce is driving a lot of retail, that requires facility located closer to populations. Because they want to have the fast delivery, last mile delivery. So technology like drone, robotics, automations, that has impact to how buildings configure. So we actually invest and constantly communicating to the technology front to make sure that we're up to speed on that. And we constantly communicate with our customers that are on the leading edge of the retail sector, on including Amazon, including JD.com, including Alibaba. So we constantly communicate with them what their requirements are. So we feel pretty comfortable. Our fundamental belief is that our facilities are driven by population and consumption. So our investment decision, the highest risk is location. And we want to make sure our facility is located in heavy concentrated population, and then make sure that our building spec are very generic, that we can accommodate any kind of upgrade and automation and process. So we feel pretty comfortable with our building specs and location selection criteria. And we also work with McKinsey over the last 2 or 3 years to develop optimized site selection to help with our customers. So there's a lot of know-how has developed over the years.
Okay, because I am more concerned about general looking at the monitoring of the technology trends that could disrupt the company's business. So is there a process in place to look at all these technology disruptors?
The thing you mentioned about potential like drone or Uber delivery, that doesn't impact our business because the goods had to be stored somewhere. So it may disrupt the delivery and shipping companies, but the physical goods must be stored at a location. It's just that we constantly figure out how to configure it, where the hub or spoke. But in general, unless someday there's a machine that's invented that can zip something and then make it vaporize and then push button come back, until then, I think we're okay.
Okay. There's one more risk that I hope to seek your advice, which is that there are more and more Chinese nationals going overseas to Japan, Korea, to buy goods and then bring that home, bypassing the entire supply chain in China. So do you see that as a risk, and how do you manage that risk?
Actually, we welcome that because 90% of facilities in China are used for domestic consumptions. And what we're seeing is that people that buy overseas and ship in, they go through our warehouse in the port area. So it actually increases the demand for import, increases the demand for a logistic facility located around the port area, which we have a presence.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chairman, sir. Tan King Sui is my name, retail investor. I have a shopping list of three questions. First question is dividends. Yours is 1.96 cents. But you're a very big company. You compare yourself with the other two blue chips of the SGX, CapitaLand, CapL, Semcor, and so on. They're giving about 9, 10, 11, 12, and even more. The telcos give more. So can you give us more? So 6 cents make it 9 cents. Then you're on par with the other groups, with the other blue chips. So you make a big jump next year. That's what I'm trying to say. Why do we invest? It's dividends, dividends, dividends. If you look around here, all my fellow shareholders, my comrades in arms, they are all winning dividends. And you have money, so give to us. Because one day, there are other companies that says, we give all our money we earn as dividends. Oh, now we're having a hard time. We give you 80%. Very good. There's one small company that gives 10%, closed-end mutual fund. Okay. There's another one that gives about, say, 80%. So what percentage of the earnings goes to dividends? That's my first question. Okay. Second question is charity. I know you have a very good charity policy. Were you approached by any charities in Singapore to give us some money and so on? Why I say that is because there are too many crooks here. People say I'm in charity, go on big umbrella. But they are crooks. If I say why are crooks? I'll give one example. Just one example. National Kidney Foundation, the infamous NKF and their saga. You give him $1, 90 cents goes to the pocket of a CEO. It's another company. It's another charity. I don't want to name it. That guy will sue me. You give him $1, 33.5 cents go to his pocket. The rest say, give to you, shareholders. Don't mention the name. That's in the annual report. So, if anyone approaches you from Singapore, be very careful, because that's our money. But for charities that really need, those people really need money, if you just told us in China and so on, we're all for it. My third is auditor. For your auditor now, how many years has he been with you? The 5 or 6 years, get a new one. Auditors can be crooks. Let me prove to you. Before there were big five, right? Deloitte, PwC, KPMG and so on. There was Anderson, American one. Was involved in Enron saga. Disappeared. Why? He carries out too many hanky-panky tricks. So don't have too much trust on the auditors. We distrust them. They play around with figures, manipulate, cover up, and so on too. So every 5 years, have a new one. There's no big four. You go to a big 10. The others, Lazada and so forth. And they're just as good. Okay, sir, I finished.
Let me take the first question on dividend. Your second question on charity, our CEO will answer that. And then your last question, auditor, our chairman of the audit committee will answer that. Okay? So on dividend, I'm afraid some of your statistics are not quite correct. Right? Our dividend yield is 3.3%, payout is 6 cents. And in fact, we recommend an increase of 9% from last year. Now, I also want to make the comment that as a prudent, responsible company, we want to pay as much as we can afford. So in deciding, in deliberating on the amount of dividend payout, we take into account our capital needs for the future because we still want to continue to grow this company. And in fact, our payout ratio is about 50%. The other thing I want to say is that if you look at the dividend yield, we are quite comparable to our peers. I don't think CapitaLand is paying 10 or 12%, as you have said.
So, 9 cents. Nine.
That's our...
You pay 9 cents, CapitaLand.
So, yeah, but that percentage is important, okay? The percentage is the important measurement for comparative purposes. The absolute number, depending on what base you're using, that's all. Anyway, let me get Steve to answer your second question.
Great. Thank you. I really do appreciate sometimes with companies we become a little bit stoic, and so it's always great to talk about our volunteer work because we take it very seriously. And in Singapore, I can tell you that, we do not give cash donations, we do not solicit, we do nothing of that. Actually, what we do, and we take great pride in it, is our employees spend a great deal of time going out to the community. And recently we were with Food from the Heart, for example, where we did a food drive and actual delivery to low-income individuals throughout various locations. And we have another program set up for December to do the same. We also take underprivileged children from time to time to museums or other areas in Singapore. So we believe very much in a hands-on approach rather than just issuing a check. And, in fact, GOP, we had 200 employees that spent about 7,000 hours on community projects. And so it's something we take great pride in, not just in Singapore, but in every one of our locations. So I really appreciate that question. Thank you.
Stephen.
Thank you very much. On your question on the rotation of auditors, what we are doing, our policy currently is exactly the policy which SGX promotes and supports, which is to ensure that, you know, we have, you know, sufficient independence with respect to the external audit function. What that entails is that the audit partner has to be rotated out of that engagement. That means every 5 years, we have to, in many respects, really suffer, you know, the need to make a change of audit partner because, as you know, you know, we do operate in a very, you know, complex, if you like, you know, environment in terms of what's happening globally and us specifically in terms of the different markets that we are in and also our industry, which is very unique. So as the audit partner exits, you know, the engagement, there is a loss of that knowledge. But on the other hand, you know, the good thing that, you know, such a policy brings is that new, fresh eyes. And to your point, you know, we remove someone who may be getting too close to management. And that is currently our policy. We will certainly, you know, constantly review this policy at the board level as to whether it is appropriate given the environment. So I trust, you know, that explains what we do today in terms of our policy with respect to rotation of auditors. Thank you.
Let me comment on what you've said. I applaud what you've done for charities. And I think what you've done should be given a lot of publicity because you're a model for other companies. I'm a journalist. I like to write about what you do for charity. Is that okay?
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Can we have the next question, please?
Good morning, Chairman. My name is Vincent Tan. I'm a shareholder. I have some questions. First, could I refer you to page... 116, right?
Can you speak into the mic?
Okay, sorry. Can I refer you to page 116? And before that, I would like to thank you all for having that case study on page 25, which helps us to understand the fund management business much better. Now, on page 116, if we look at the Brazil business, it seems to be in negative territory. And last year was worse, much worse. Figures were like negative, close to 200 million. This year is much better. It's down to about negative 66 million. It's kind of around there. 49 million, and then there's 56 million for each of the funds. So could I understand why the negative, and especially the other comprehensive income figures? What is that? Could you help us to understand what is that, and why that contributes, push the whole figures down so drastically? That's my first question. Do I ask question by question?
Maybe I address your first question first.
Okay.
So when we invest in real estate in each country, like in Brazil, we invest in U.S. dollars terms because we report in U.S. dollar terms. When the currency goes up and down, we either lose money or gain money on accounting terms. But because we're not selling the asset, it's just every quarter we mark to market. So these losses you're seeing is a result of two things. One is the currency fluctuation.
Translation losses,
which is non-cash.
Okay.
The second thing is that because the interest rate environment move up and down, and the value of these asset cap rate move up and down as well. And again, it's also reflected every quarter. But again, those are not cash losses either. So what you're seeing here are mainly driven by currency and also valuation of the assets
so
up and down.
So it's revaluation and
currency.
Forex translation.
Yes. So basically we invest in each country for the medium to long term. So throughout the years, the currency move up and down. If you look at Brazil over the last 12 months, actually over the last 6 months, have strengthened the currency. So again, you will see some gains from that every quarter up and down. But again, it's very much a translation and non-cash.
Next question. If we look at page 26, and we look at the last line on the table, which is the GLP co-investment for your fund management platform. The overall total is 32%, but I know that in China, we seem to be taking in a higher share of the co-investment at 56%. Could I try to understand why so? In China, do we take a higher co-investment stand?
Okay. So if you look at across the board, in the U.S., it's the lowest, 10%.
Yep.
It's because we go in the U.S. and buy these very steady, stable income assets we manage. And the return for a steady, low-risk returns are typically about 10 to 12% IRR. And it gives about 7-8% cash on cash yield. So these are low return but low risk. From that standpoint, we take a lower percentage, and then we get a fee from the other 90%. In China, we believe in the upside of development. So we buy land, we develop. We get fees on the other 44% that we don't own. But we also make money from the 56% on the development. And once we finish the project, we believe that the asset value is reflected, then we sell down our stake over time. So it's purely because we think there's a lot more upside in China on the development, and we keep a higher percentage. And then over time, once the asset is developed and stabilized, we will sell down our percentage. So I'm not sure if that makes sense. It's purely because we like the returns.
It makes a lot of sense to me, yeah. I would like to refer you to page 154 to follow up on what you just said, right? On page 154, if you look at EBIT of the table, on EBIT, and then there's EBIT excluding revaluation, right? For EBIT,
we have very high figure of 1 billion. And EBIT, excluding the revaluation, is much smaller. So evidently, we have a lot of revaluation gains, right? But I'm wondering, how do we monetize these revaluation gains? Because that will translate into what the gentleman was asking about in terms of dividends and whether you could plow back for further growth. So when do we act on the kind of gains that you have seen in China?
That's a very good question. So if you look at, I give an example in Japan, we keep developing on our balance sheet, and then once we believe that the asset value have appreciated to a point where it will stabilize, we start selling into the J-REIT it was set up in Japan. So you're going to see similar approaches in China. Right now, we believe the asset value will continue to appreciate. And once we think that we reach a point where the appreciation rate will be slowed down and stabilized, at that point, you will see us contribute asset into either a private or a public vehicle that we will manage. And then we recycle capital to develop new projects to capture higher development margins. So to answer your question, we will monitor the different phase of the cycle in each country. And in China at this point, we believe rent continue to grow. We believe that asset value continue to grow. So at this point, selling would be leaving too much money on the table. We believe that once the time is right, we will recycle the asset into a fund and then sell down and capture that that development gain that we have on the book. If you look at the track record over the last few years, there's been billions of dollars that's been transferred from development gain to real cash when we put into the funds.
Thank you for that. Could I follow up with the next question on page 22 on development starts? Right. Again, I'd like to thank you for your case study because that really helps us to understand your illustration. But I'm trying to understand what you said about the logistics business being in a high yield, short development cycle. So could I understand, like, for our business, when we say short development cycle, what are we talking about? 1-2 years or maybe even shorter, if I get it correct?
So in the warehousing, when we compare, we say short, we're comparing to like office towers or shopping malls. Typically, those cycles are 4 to 5 years. In our business, construction is typically about 12 months.
12 months.
So the cycle is relatively short when we talk about development phases. So anytime we see a big economic turn downturn, we can effectively quickly shut down our development, and then our risk exposure is minimized. So that's the beauty about having a short development cycle.
Yeah. So I want to emphasize about again the part about the risk. You also stated in your write-up in your development starts that you typically make sure that there's a pre-lease demand of 1.5 to 2 times before you even start, right? And you say you do that very strictly. I hope we are doing that. And so when you said earlier in your report, when you were giving your presentation, that the second-tier cities are seeing a slowing down in demand, do we still adhere to that kind of strict development starts restrictions for those cities? So the land that we have in China, we would be very careful with that. Yep.
Yes, that's a very good question. So we have, just to restate, we have seen some of the second-tier cities have oversupply temporary, so we are slowed down in those cities. To answer your question, of all the new starts that we're currently developing, we only develop in cities in aggregate that have 87% lease up or higher. So our internal guideline is that unless the first project, the first phase is 85% lease up, we will not start the second phase. So yes, we are following very disciplinedly. So we just did the calculation of all the projects we're starting is only a market that have 87% lease up.
a last question on the development starts. We are getting development margins of about 27% last year, and typically it's from 25 to 36% over the past few years. Is that a gross figure or not? Is it the gross margins?
This is the development margin from what it would cost and what we believe that the market value of those assets. So this is before tax.
Okay. Could I then move on to the operations? The part about on page 20 about using optimization tools to help the clients relocate, right? But you say there's 20% savings, right? But have you actually taken into account the relocation cost? Because when you ask the clients to, when you optimize, the clients have to relocate, right? So is the 20% savings after the clients have relocated to the places that your tool says they should do, do that to sort of optimize the routes. So is that after or before the relocation cost?
So the saving costs are mainly coming from reducing in transportation costs because optimizing location and network. So these are the larger part of the typically in logistic warehousing rent only make up about 10% of the total cost. Actually, 50 to 60% is transportation costs, and that's on a daily basis. So compared to one-time relocation costs, is very small. One-time relocation costs is very small compared to the overall transportation savings. So yes, these numbers will include all the costs because customer, when they make the decisions, they look at the new facility, new leases, and typically one-time relocation costs over the next 3 to 5 years, saving in operation on annual basis. So that is taken in consideration.
Okay. My last comment, it's not a question. On page 21, right, we have the figures for lease ratios. We have the figures for completed portfolios. And typically, you'll give 3 years. But for rents, you seem to give one figure. I hope you could, incorporate, say, a 3 year so that we can understand the rental trends and the rental reversions. And that will help us to understand how it's trending.
Okay, that's a good comment, yes.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairman.
Thank you for those questions. Any other questions? At the back, yeah. Oh, sorry.
Hi.
Maybe.
Who goes first, Chairman?
Why don't you go first?
Okay.
The one in front.
Shareholder, Nim Andrew Goh.
Can you speak into the mic?
I'm trying to speak into the mic. Is it better?
No, it's not. It's not on.
I think it's not on. It's not? Or maybe I just. Hi, Andrew Goh, fellow
better,
shareholder.
Yeah.
Maybe just go through a few quick comments. With the listing of CNLP in Hong Kong. Based comparing their results and our results, I think management has done a good job with a lower vacancy and higher rental. So I think it's a very good job on the management side. In terms of breakdown-wise, is there any way we can get probably more granular details like the different valuation, like what CNLP actually has provided in the IPO docs? So maybe with that, maybe for those shareholders that are interested, we can actually go and download on the website.
We actually give a lot of details on our earnings releases, and so there's on the supplementaries, there's a lot of details.
But the supplementary actually don't really break down as much, like where are the weakness, because you only mentioned tier 2, but I think some of our shareholders might be more interested in where are really the pockets of weaknesses. For example, like some areas in China having 15% vacancy rate, but ours have actually much lower, so maybe just want to see more detail in that. And then with the recent listing of EC World REIT, there's quite a lot of interest in the investment community that are interested in this kind of e-commerce. So, thinking along that line, so is this probably a good time we start doing some small scale monetization of the assets, because if you look at the valuation wise, I think we are actually traded quite cheaply versus the, even CNLP based on the undeveloped part. Then in terms of priorities, because you mentioned that you wanted to be the number one in all, for US we are still number two. So maybe going forward, where are your priorities? Is it in the US, or are we going to do more buybacks given that the share price is quite undervalued, or more on development starts? Or the present-wise, currently in geographical presence, we don't really actually have Europe. Is that something that you will consider?
First of all, due to SGX regulations, we are not allowed to comment about future actions about buybacks and things like that. As far as you mentioned about us being number one, being number one is a result of things we focus on doing every day. It's not because we want to be number one at any cost. So to answer your question, if we continue to be disciplined and focusing on what we do in the U.S., someday we may or may not become number one, but that's not the number one priority for us. What we are focusing on is to continue to look at the fundamental supply and demand of each market. So and like in the U.S., we continue to have very healthy supply and demand situation on the warehouse. If you look at last few quarters, renewal rent can grow at 19% to 20%. And what's even more interesting is that we have more demand from investors that want to participate and want us to manage the money to buy asset in the U.S. than we have product available to sell to them. So as a result, given the healthy fundamentals, we'll continue to look for opportunities to grow our asset under management in the U.S. We have a very strong team we've built in place already. It's very very scalable, and it's very profitable for our fund management business. So we continue to look at opportunity there. As far as Europe, if you look at of all the markets around the world, we're focusing on is there a significant population? Is the market big enough to make sense for us to make an investment in? Under those criteria, Europe would meet that the criteria. And typically, we look at Europe, they're probably one to two years behind the cycle compared to the U.S. market. But again, we don't have any concrete plans for Europe at this point. As far as asking the question, how do we allocate capital and what to invest in, we evaluate each country on a separate independent, and we actually, even within the country, we'll go down to sub-markets. So we look at our opportunities across the world that we currently operate in, and whatever give us the best return for the risk associated with it, we allocate capital accordingly. So typically right now, if you ask me what's the best market to do development, would be Japan. Japan is probably the best risk-adjusted return for development, and followed by China at this point. So on the development front, we'll continue to put capital in these two major markets. And then on the stable core income opportunities, I think U.S. continue to have quite a bit of opportunities to pursue.
Okay, can we? Do you have another question?
No, just on the first one, I mean, is there any way we can get more of the supplementary data, the granular ones? Is
there so our IR department, Imbica, has all the details. But again, you refer. I don't want to make comment on. What was the name called? China
National Logistics, CNLP.
So it's not a fair comparison because. They only have a few assets, so they have to list all of them to show what they have. So,
thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Manu here, shareholder, board and shareholders. My question is, can you please look at the back of the book, page 154? This is note number 31. And these are the operating segments. What it gives is a good picture of the group in terms of the geographical revenues and earnings. Now, my question is, Chairman, on looking at the total sums for your profits and for your numbers there, I see that the group is quite dependent on changes in fair value of investments, both at subsidiary and associate level. So if you look at the last column total, 720 million fair value changes in fair value, and also for associates another 176, about $900 million. And then when you look at the bottom line, you know, you get a 1 billion profit now. So 900 million coming from revaluation surpluses. Of course, I know there's tax element and all that, but the dependence on revaluation gains is very substantial. And if you look down at EBIT, for example, it's about 1.5 billion, but your EBIT excluding revaluation is about only about 600 million. And so when you take out, after taking out NCI and so on, I mean, you are left with 240 million. The concern is actually for such a large business, I mean, how much of it is real recurrent earnings that you are getting versus revaluation gains? Because if you are dependent, so heavily dependent on revaluation gains, ultimately when the markets that you operate in where assets are no longer continuously appreciating, you are going to see quite a massive drop in your bottom line, right? I mean, these are proper accounting methods, but it's still a concern, I think, that the recurrent earnings are not there. We are riding on asset inflation. Could we have your comments?
Thank you for your question. So I just want to share with you that majority of the revaluation, so-called mark-to-market, is from effort that we buy land at cost, and then we construct, and then we lease with customers, and then the asset become more valuable. So it's not sitting there and let the asset appreciate. So in that aspect, we're no different than any other residential developer where they buy land, they develop, and they sell and recognize profit. The only difference is that we don't sell right away. So that's the only difference in that business model.
Okay, so you are saying that you do asset enhancement, basically. It doesn't just happen that you hold on.
These are development profits. Okay. So we basically, right, we buy land, we develop, and we create value. So if we sell right away, we get accounting profit and cash because we believe in the long-term hold, so we don't sell right away. So that's why people said, oh, that's accounting profit. Actually, we look at that no different than real profit because if you look at every year, we sell an asset, if you look at every time we sell an asset, the value, the cash we receive for that asset we sell is usually at or higher than what we record in the book. So everything we record in the book, I believe that we take a pretty conservative approach. So I don't agree with anyone making comment, those are not real cash. We look at those no different than real cash. It's just a matter when they want to convert it.
Okay. So one day we'll sell them and realize the profit.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yes.
Okay, could I ask, my other question is on page 66. And so, therefore, in terms of remuneration of your senior executives, these revaluation gains and so on are also factored in because you're using, when you pay them for performance, the performance part of it, the variable bonuses and so on, you are using numbers which include the revaluation gains in rewarding them for the performance?
That's correct, yes. Because we do believe that if you look at a lot of resources and our people are focusing on out there buying the best sites and constructing them and create value, so those, in our mind, are real profit that we generate.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Maybe I just add to that we, as a company, pays what's market, but adjusted for company's performance and individual performance.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Next question, please. If any. Yes, please.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Chairman and the board. My name is Ng Chi Hen, shareholder. May I ask a question about your CEO's shares in the company? I noticed that currently the CEO owns about 1% of the company. But I also believe a couple of years ago, the CEO had about 3.8%, which means that he had sold a majority of his shares. May I have the details on this, Mr. Chairman?
Let me try and answer that. Some of you may know that the deputy chairman, executive vice chairman, Jeff Schwartz, passed away. So Jeff had a significant part of that. So when he passed away, Ming becomes the owner of just that half that share. That's reflected in that number.
So the 3.8% is both Jeff and myself plus all the management team. So when you point out my 1%, that's my share of the... To give you a very direct answer, I only sold shares once, and I basically sell down to pay down the U.S. government tax that I owe.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Please proceed.
Sorry, good day. My name is Wora, shareholder. I'm just more into, like, just now you mentioned about SGX. Yes, fine, everybody follows SGX rules and all that. But what SGX have overlooked in the past few years and recently also is quite questionable. Sometimes they are very tight on things which they don't have to be, and they are very lax on things which they are not supposed to be. So following the rules is one thing. Compliance, business models, checks and balances has to be internal, because at the end of the day, you're facing us. So don't look at SGX, we all follow rules also. I also follow the traffic rules. Secondly, Brazil, China, for quite some time, and I don't see in the near future that their growth will be so significant. You'll be releasing assets which you'll be making money from. Are you looking into other markets? Because I don't see you looking into the Asian model, like Indonesia, India, where the middle class has improved quite drastically. And I've traveled these countries also, and they have a massive shortage of warehousing. Because I've been involved in warehousing in India, and I know the problems. Even there today, the government is seeking out people to invest in warehousing, invest in logistics. In Indonesia also now, the rules are more lax. The doors are open wider. So is there a study being done? What is the direction model for other markets now?
Well, let me first respond to your first part of your question about SGX rules. I'd like to say that we pride ourselves to have a very broad, robust, high standards of corporate governance, which includes rules. It goes beyond that. I think it's important to have this framework to work within so that your interests safeguard. So on the second part of your comments, I'll ask the CEO, Ming, to respond to that.
So there are two particular markets that you mentioned, one's being India and one's being Indonesia. I agree from a population demand standpoint, especially India, at this point, there's a strong demand from e-commerce and local retailers looking for high-quality facilities. I have looked at that market for many years, and I still pay a lot of attention to it. One of the things that we find is that the expectation from landowners is so high because they believe that every site could be converted into residential and commercial uses. So they have such a high expectation on the land value that they're holding on to. When we put the numbers together, the return from developing, it just worked out to be about the same as interest costs. So from the difficulty and the risk associated with that kind of investment, we don't believe it justify. So at this point, we still monitor it. Someday, I believe that it will be a very, very large market, and the demand is continue to be very strong. We have seen retailers using truck trailers to store their goods because they cannot find good facilities. So I agree with you, there's a strong demand. And same that apply for Indonesia. But at this point, I think for the next 2-3 years, I do not see us enter this market because it will be a major distraction. It is a huge time commitment. And at this point, we see our energy and time could have a better return elsewhere.
Hi, my name is Stephen Chen. I have a couple of questions. I'm a new shareholder.
Or are you representing?
Sorry.
Are you representing yourself or
myself?
Or the company. Okay.
I'm a new shareholder just bought in the last 12 months.
Okay.
I have a couple of questions on the performance. I think just now the CEO was talking about the profit ex revaluation. And I think we were discussing how it's gone up to about 240 million. But if I look at the last couple of years, it's come down from almost about 350, 260 million. It's trended down to 200 and it picked up in the previous year. Could you better understand this trend? Because it seems like on the one side, you're talking about development profits are also real profits from the management and board's perspective. Being so, then perhaps what is accounting for the ex-revaluation profit trending downwards from 360 to about 240?
That's a very good question. So as I mentioned from the beginning, 5-6 years ago, we've been focusing on grow our fund management business. And the fund management business, the asset under management come from two sources. One source is buying external, outside market. We buy asset, we manage it. The second source is asset we own. So when we, like in Japan, we have a rental income yielding product. We sell into the J-REIT. And we get cash, but we increase management fee. So when you see there's going to be time frames where we sell assets that have rental income that contribute to the core income into a fund, so we lose the income from that asset we sold, but we get fees from managing those assets, and then we get cash back. Until that cash is reinvested to replace those assets we sold, you're going to see some changes up and down. So it's mainly driven by selling asset into fund that we want to create.
So in the sense, those are somewhat one-off in a way, depending how often you kind of recycle it in a sense.
It's our business model. You will see continue up and down as we can sell. And then, one thing you will see is that our fund management fees have grown from nothing to $150 million financial year.
Sure.
And have grown 30%. So that's how we grow the fund management.
There are a few other questions. One is on the gearing. I think around the IPO, you all had gearing of almost 30%. You brought it down to net gearing about 10%, and last year it picked up to about 28%. Could we understand this trend? Is there a certain cap on it that we should be concerned? Because I think previously under Prologis, there were concerns about perhaps in the past where there was over-leverage over there. Thank you.
That's a good question. The board is very focused on providing guidelines on the company as a whole, what we can leverage to. And the maximum the company can leverage to is 40%. And currently, we're about 24% on a look-through basis and about 20% on the net basis. So we are still way below that level.
So that's net debt over equity, or you're talking of
asset. Someone?
Net debt over asset. Yes. So 40% net debt over asset.
It's the maximum ceiling that we set up for ourselves. But again, if you look at it right now, we're about 20.4%.
That's one last question. We are trying to understand this part, is that on page one of your annual report, you talk about having 36 billion of assets, another 35 billion in AUM. In your balance sheet, you have 23 billion in total assets. Plus, could you help us understand the difference between the 36 and the 23? Because I assume the 35 AUM does not count under your balance sheet.
So when we manage fund under management, some of the capital come from we manage for ourselves, but a lot of capital come from outside capital partners. Okay. So we cannot take their assets into our balance sheet, but we get the fees for that. So that's the difference.
But the 36 includes the
36 include our customers, our partners, capital partners' asset.
Because if your AUM on the other side, fund under management is 35, then you only have a gap of one.
It just happened that close. But basically, these are two separate set of numbers. $36 billion total asset under management that we have commitment from investors. So of the $36 billion AUM, we only deploy about $25 billion. So we still have about $11, $12 billion that we have not invested. So these are commitment from investors.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Neotic Singh, shareholder. I just want to understand how you go about doing your share buyback, because I noticed that you were buying back shares early part of the fiscal year, up to October, and then there was a break until about a couple of months back in May, and you resumed share buyback again. Mm. When in actual fact, during the period, the share price actually dropped much lower compared to recently.
Okay, yeah, I think you will understand that there are periods, blackout periods, that we are not allowed to buy, okay? And obviously, the reason why we do share buyback is to recognize that the shares are undervalued and we see this more like an investment. But the break is sometimes due to the blackout periods.
Okay, so that's the only reason.
Well, there are other reasons, because we got to time it to such that it makes sense for us.
I mean, in the same fiscal year, you are, when the share price dropped lower than what you're buying, you are not buying back.
Yeah, I think you will know that that to time to perfection is not possible, right? So it's a question of a judgment call at different points in time.
Okay, but then you resume again the same fiscal year.
Sorry, say that
I
again.
I mean, you resume buying back again the same fiscal year, I think, sometime end of May.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so as I said, you know, when you buy is not a function of the calendar year or the fiscal year. It's a question of those things I've just mentioned earlier.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Tan Keng Sui. I'm a retail investor. My question is, do you think that Brazil is a good place for you to invest? We went into Brazil, it was a darling. Everything was fantastic. But now they got one new team. The old team, they say, is very bad. The new team is also very corrupted. You have another team, you'll also be corrupted. So are you trying to pull out Brazil? Perhaps, as someone said, go to Indonesia. So how good is Brazil? They're going to the Olympics, but they can't clear the bay. So when doing windsurfing and sailing, you must keep your mouth closed, read from the newspaper. Because otherwise the water goes inside and you get sick. You know, you get a diarrhea and everything. So in other words, how rotten is Brazil? What makes you go into Brazil? And now, you change your mind and get out of Brazil and go to another country, or that you're not expanding in Brazil anymore. Because it's so rotten.
Whether we enter a market, buy asset, sell asset, is constantly something that we evaluate at the board level. Again, just to give you some color in Brazil, from a mid to long term, this fundamental is very strong. You have a young population, strong consumer base, very constrained on land because of the strong protection on environmental. So from a development return, owning asset return is actually quite attractive. Even though it have a high inflation, our leases are tied to inflation, so we get an annual escalation of 7% on the rental growth. And in real estate, in the high inflation environment, is actually quite nice because you have a fixed cost when you go in, because we don't have a lot of employees. The land, you know, the building is, it doesn't require a lot of maintenance costs. So if you have a fixed cost and every year the rent go up by 7-8%, by definition your assets appreciate, assuming cap rate remain constant. So it makes a good risk-adjusted return for that market. But we do evaluate asset level, country level, on an annual basis from the board on our strategy review sessions.
Thank you. Any more question? No? Okay. If there are no further questions, we will now proceed to conduct electronic poll voting. Voting will open for 15 seconds. Please cast your votes now. Press 1 if you wish to vote for, and 2 if you wish to vote against. Well, as the resolution is approved by a majority of the shareholders present and voting, I declare the resolution carried. The next item is to approve the proposed final dividend, which we did talk about a little earlier. The directors have recommended the payment of a final one-tier tax exam dividend of 6 Singapore cents per ordinary share for the year ended 31st March 2016. I'm pleased to propose that the final one-tier tax exempt dividend of 6 Singapore cents per ordinary share for the year ended 31st March 2016 be and is hereby approved and declared payable on 22nd August 2016 to holders of ordinary shares registered in the books of the company as at 5 p.m. on 5th August 2016. May I call upon a shareholder to second the motion? Press one. On the keypad to have your name recorded. Thank you. The motion has been proposed and seconded. Are there any questions? Okay, if not, if there are no further questions, we will now proceed to conduct electronic polling poll voting. Voting will open for 15 seconds. Please cast your votes now. Press 1 for if you wish to vote for, and 2 to vote against. Right. As the resolution is approved by a majority of the shareholders present and voting, I declare the resolution carried. The next item is to re-elect directors retiring by rotation under Article 91 of the company's constitution. The directors who are due to retirement under Article 91 are Mr. Luciano Lewandowski, Mr. Fang Fenlei, and myself. The directors, including myself, being eligible, have offered ourselves to be re-elected. As Resolution 3A deals with my re-election as the director of the company, I propose Mr. Stephen Lim to take the chair for this item and will now hand over the chair to him. Mr. Lim.
Thank you, Chairman. I propose that Dr. Sidney Huat, the director who retires in accordance with Article 91 of the company's constitution, be and is hereby re-elected as a director of the company. Dr. Sik will abstain from voting on his shareholdings in respect of this ordinary resolution. May I call upon the shareholder to second the motion? Please press 1 on the keypad to have your name recorded. Thank you very much. The motion has been proposed and seconded. We will now proceed to conduct the electronic poll voting unless there are any questions that you may have at this point in time. If not, then let's proceed. Voting will open for 15 seconds. Please cast your votes now. Thank you. If you wish to vote for, press 1. If you wish to vote against, press 2. As you can see on the screen above, the resolution has been approved by a majority of the shareholders present and voting. I declare the resolution carried. I will now hand over the chair back to Dr. Sikh.
Thank you, Stephen. Next, I propose that Mr. Luciano Lewandowski, the director who retires in accordance with Article 91 of the company's constitution, be and is hereby re-elected as a director of the company. Mr. Lewandowski will abstain from voting on this shareholdings in respect of his of this ordinary resolution. May I call upon the shareholder to second the motion? Press 1 on the keypad to have your name registered. Thank you. The motion has been proposed and seconded. We will now proceed to conduct the electronic poll voting. Voting will open for 15 seconds. Please cast your votes now. One, press 1 if you wish to vote for, and 2 if you wish to vote against. As the resolution is approved by a majority of the shareholders present and voting, I declare the resolution carried. Next, I propose that Mr. Fang Fanlei, the director who retires in accordance with Article 91 of the company's constitution, be and is hereby re-elected as a director of the company. Mr. Fang will abstain from voting on his shareholdings in respect of this ordinary resolution. May I call upon a shareholder record the motion? Second the motion. Please press 1 on the keyboard to have your name recorded. Thank you. The motion has been proposed and seconded. We will now proceed to conduct the electronic poll voting. Voting will open for 15 seconds. Please cast your vote now. Press 1 for 4 and 2 against. As the resolution is approved by a majority of the shareholders present and voting, I declare the resolution carried. The next item is for the appointment of directors who cease to hold office under Section 153, Subsection 6 of the Companies Act, Chapter 50 of Singapore, which was in force immediately before 3rd January 2016. The directors who are due to be reappointed are Mr. Po Ching Min Mang Fan and Mr. Yoichiro Furuse. The directors, being eligible, have offered themselves for reappointment. Upon reappointment at this meeting, they will continue in office as directors of the company from the date of this meeting without limitation to tenure save for retirement by rotation under the company's constitution. I propose that Mr. Po Cheng be reappointed as a director of the company. Mr. Cheng will abstain from voting on this shareholdings in respect of this ordinary resolution. May I call upon a shareholder to second the motion? Press 1 to record your name. Thank you. The motion has been proposed and seconded. We will now proceed to conduct the electronic voting. Voting will open for 15 seconds. Please cast your votes now. Again, 1 is for 4 and 2 for against. Thank you. As the resolution is approved by a majority of shareholders present and voting, I declare the resolution carried. I next propose Mr. Yoichiro Furuse be reappointed as a director of the company. Mr. Furuse will abstain from voting on this shareholdings in respect of this ordinary resolution. May I call upon a shareholder to second the motion? Please press 1 to record your name. Thank you. The motion has been proposed and seconded. We will now proceed to conduct the electronic voting. Voting will open for 15 seconds. Please cast your vote. Again, 1 for 4 and 2 against. As the resolution is approved by a majority of the shareholders present and voting, I declare the resolution carried. The next item on the agenda is Resolution 5 to approve directors' fees. Your directors recommend for approval the payment of a total sum of $2.7 million as directors' fee for the financial year ending 31 March 2017. All non-executive directors will abstain from voting on this shareholdings in respect of the ordinary resolution. May I call upon a shareholder to propose the motion? Please press 1 to record your name. Thank you. May I ask? Thank you. The motion has been proposed and seconded. Are there any questions? If not, we will now proceed to conduct the electronic poll voting. Voting will open for 15 seconds. Please cast your votes now. 1 to vote yes and 2 against. As the resolution is approved by a majority of the shareholders present and voting, I declare the resolution carried. The next is Resolution 6 is to reappoint KPMG LLP as the company's auditors and to authorize the directors to fix their remuneration. The audit committee has reviewed and recommended the reappointment of KPMG LLP as the company's auditors. I propose that Mrs. KPMG LLP be reappointed as the company's auditors to hold office until the next annual general meeting and that the directors of the company be authorized to fix their remuneration. May I ask the shareholder second the motion? Press 1 to record your name. Thank you. The motion has been proposed and seconded. Are there any questions? If not, we will now proceed to conduct the electronic poll voting. Voting will open for 15 seconds. Please cast your votes now. 1 for 4 and 2 for against. As the resolution is approved by a majority of the shareholders present and voting, I declare the resolution carried. The next item on the agenda is to deal with the special business. There are three items on the agenda under special business. 1, share issue mandate. 2, authority to grant share awards and allot shares. And 3, renewal of share purchase mandate. Starting with Resolution 7, 7 is to approve the renewal of the share issue mandate. The text of the resolution is set out in the notice. The company is seeking for a lower sub-limit than that allowed by the SGX listing manual for issuance of shares on a non-pro rata basis. I propose this ordinary resolution. May I ask a shareholder to second the motion, please? Please press 1 to record your name. Thank you. The motion has been proposed and seconded. Any questions? Well, if not, we will now proceed to conduct the electronic voting. Voting will be will open for 15 seconds. Please cast your votes now. Again, 1 is yes and 2 against. As the resolution is approved by a majority of shareholders present and voting, I declare the resolution carried. Resolution 8 is to allow the directors to grant awards and issue shares under the Global Logistics Logistic Property Share Plans. The text of the resolution is set out in the notice. I propose this ordinary resolution. May I ask a shareholder to second the motion? Press 1 on the keyboard to register your name. Thank you. The motion has been proposed and seconded. Are there any questions? If not, we will now proceed to conduct the electronic poll voting. Voting will open for 15 seconds. Please cast your votes now. 1 is for yes and 2 for against. Thank you. As the resolution is approved by a majority of the shareholders present and voting, I declare the resolution carried. Resolution 9 is to approve the renewal of share purchase mandate. The text of the resolution is set out in the notice. I propose this resolution, this ordinary resolution. May I ask the shareholder to second the motion, please? Press 1 to record your name. Thank you. The motion has been proposed and seconded. Any question, please? If not, we will now proceed to conduct electronic poll voting. Voting is open for 15 seconds. Please cast your votes now. 1 for for and 2 for against. Motion is carried. Thank you. Resolution 10 is to approve and adopt a new constitution of the company in substitution for and to the exclusion of the existing constitution. The text of the resolution is set out in the notice. I propose this special resolution. May I ask a shareholder to second the motion? Press 1 to register your name. Thank you. The motion has been proposed and seconded. Question, please. If there are no further questions, we will now proceed to conduct the electronic poll voting. Again, voting will be open for 15 seconds. Please cast your votes now. 1 for for and 2 for against. As the resolution is approved by a majority of not less than
3/4 of the shareholders present and voting, I declare the special resolution carried. Thank you very much. I now declare the annual general meeting closed.